tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running, and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real...
Dan, and our guest this afternoon, William Grieg, is talking about this case that's going to be heard before the Supreme Court, and it has to do whether the people in the city of Washington, D.C., in the District of Columbia, have the right to actually to be able to have firearms. And certainly they want the right to have firearms, certainly because since they've taken away that right, why Washington, D.C. has become the murder capital of the world. Mm-hmm. But there are people out there who do not want the people of Washington, D.C., most predominantly black population, to be able to defend themselves in their own homes and want the chaos that comes when you disarm the public. So this is a very important case, and you pick up the story there, William.
It is a very important case because this will be the first time in 70 years, according to most of the commentary generated by this case, the prospect of it being ruled on by the Supreme Court, that would accost the fundamental question of the Second Amendment, to wit, does the Second Amendment protect an individual right to armed self-defense? If it doesn't protect a right to armed self-defense, then the English language is fundamentally meaningless because it is explicitly stated here that it is a right which inheres in the people. And everywhere else in the Bill of Rights where that locution is used, it refers to rights that are held by the people individually and that can be exercised, if you will, in the aggregate through various forums and various government entities. But it is a right that that applies to the individual every time that phrase is used in the Bill of Rights. The specific case of Mr. Heller, his name is Dick Anthony Heller, is really interesting because it goes right to the heart of the question of the nature of government and the purpose of the right to keep and bear arms. As you pointed out, the District of Columbia has probably the most draconian firearms laws anywhere in the United States. The district is an interesting situation because it is not a state. It is a city that is the seat of government. It has a special constitutional status. And it really produces nothing in particular, neither butter nor shoes nor poetry, as Sinclair Lewis would put it. What it does is it produces laws and regulation. And so it's not even really a state. It is a wholly owned entity of the federal government. And so one would think that if the Second Amendment means anything, first of all, it means that there is an individual right to keep and bear arms that Congress cannot infringe, and that those entities which are under the jurisdiction of Congress could not infringe either. And secondly, one would assume that the District of Columbia, being under plenary federal authority, that the Second Amendment would mean that the citizens of Washington, D.C. would be the most secure in their right to keep and bear arms. Unfortunately, as you point out, the firearms laws of Washington, D.C. are, frankly, totalitarian. They are completely different from the firearms laws that grew up organically in the United States, in that you really cannot own a weapon in Washington, D.C. unless you happen to be one of those people who wears a state-issued costume and has some kind of credential issued by the government. And Dick Anthony Heller is such a person. His day job is working as what is called a part of a special police unit. As a special police officer, his duty is to guard members of the federal judiciary. And while he is working in his day job, he is not only entitled to carry a firearm, he is expected to carry a firearm and required to be proficient in the use thereof. However, when he goes home at night, takes off his state-issued costume, and puts on more respectable clothing, denoting his status as a member of the productive class rather than the tax-consuming class, he cannot own a firearm for his own personal protection. That means that he can't own a handgun. He also cannot own a long gun. It's forbidden to him while he's living in Washington, D.C. So the question most rational people would ask at this point is, what magic quality is there that inheres in state officials that makes them uniquely and exclusively worthy to carry firearms to such an extent that only when you're wearing a state-issued costume and working on the clock or employed by a government entity at some level or another are you permitted to own a firearm? That's basically the question which is being posed here in the Heller case. And it's a really interesting dividing line in our culture. If you take a look at the groups that are filing amicus or friend-of-the-court briefs on behalf of one side or another in this dispute, you have, of course, the gun rights groups that are supporting Heller's claim and the claim of a number of of co-plaintiffs, co-respondents, I should say, in this suit. But you also have on the other side just about every conceivable left-wing organization. These are people who, when it suits their purposes, will talk about civil rights or talk about individual liberties or civil liberties. But now you got a case here which goes to the fundamental nature of whether the individual has a right to defend himself and whether an individual who is not a government employee is, in a fundamental sense, equal, enjoys some fundamental equality with government employees. The left is gravitating toward the position that the state should have plenary authority in these matters. And the amicus brief that I found most arresting, and I've written about it on my blog, Pro Libertate, is the one that was filed by the left-wing group that calls itself the Anti-Defamation League in favor of the position that the D.C., Washington, D.C. firearms laws should be left unmolested by the courts. And the reason why I find that particularly arresting is because the ADL for 40 or 50 years has been treating those of us who talk about the reserved powers of states, or what is more popularly known as states' rights, talking about us as if we were some kind of misanthropic throwbacks to the dark days of segregation and how you cannot embrace the states' rights position without summoning up to memory all the horrible things that were done under the Jim Crow laws and things that happened in the pre-civil rights era South. And now the ADL is embracing what it's pleased to call a states' rights position on the assumption that the most important right of a state, or in this case the District of Columbia, would be the right of the state government to disarm everybody except for those who are government employees, police, military personnel, security personnel employed by the government, and so forth. And so as long as you're talking about the power of the state forcibly to disarm the civilian population that resides within its boundaries, the ADL is suddenly a born-again proponent of the state's rights view, and they're talking now about the idea that the Second Amendment doesn't protect an individual right of any kind. It instead protects what they're calling the right of a state to have an exclusive franchise within its boundaries on the exercise of force using firearms. They're talking about, in other words, this idea of the government having a monopoly on the legitimate use of force, in this case, the state exercising that monopoly. You know, the real purpose of the Second Amendment is to protect the power of state governments to disarm their population. Now, that requires the type of mental contortion that even Orwell would consider to be a little bit excessive. But that pretty much is the position staked out in the ADL's brief, and they offer it in this little ahistorical vacuum and in complete ignorance of the fact that the one necessary precondition for genocide and other forms of political murder is to disarm the targeted population. That's going on today in various countries in Africa. It went on in Rwanda 14, 15 years ago, where we had over a million people killed in the space of 100 days, right under the noses of a UN peacekeeping force, multinational peacekeeping force. And, of course, the most notorious example everybody can think of is what happened to the Jews of Germany and other occupied countries in Europe during World War II, which is an event the ADL insisted we should always remember and commemorate dutifully. And yet here they are talking about the idea that the government has to exercise this monopoly on force, that there is no circumstance in which it is appropriate and justified for people to consider taking up arms against the government. As a matter of fact, in their brief, they quote an historian who is pretty much unknown beyond this brief. He's, as I say in my column, he's fallen into well-earned obscurity, saying that, and I quote, "The rebellion of a people against a government established by themselves is not justifiable even in an extreme case." In other words, there pretty much is no circumstance envisioned by this amicus brief in the Heller case submitted by the ADL in which it would be the proper thing for people to take up arms against the government. That's a really interesting position for them to take because that puts them squarely on the side, for instance, of the National Socialist regime in Germany, which had exactly the same perspective on the issue of individual firearms ownership and on the issue of whether there should be a reserved right, a recognized right on the part of the people to overthrow the government by force. Well, once we came to power, say Adolf Hitler in 1933, and then he acted on this in 1934, We cannot have a second revolution. The people have spoken. Henceforth and forever, we are the legitimate representatives of the German people. And so we will undertake every effort within the scope of our imagination, and their imaginations are really quite well stocked in this regard, to ensure that we have total power over our subject population. And that, of course, included the disarmament of any civilian who was not somehow connected to the party apparatus, particularly those who were of Jewish ancestry. That was one of the first things they did, was they disarmed the Jews, and we know how that story turned out.
Well, we saw the same thing with the Armenians there, before the Turks slaughtered them, and they saw the same thing in China before the communists slaughtered the people there. This is the tool of tyrants, and of course the ADL is certainly not a democratic or representative organization.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of the establishment, hiding behind this idea that they're defending Jews in an effort to destroy the freedom of all people.
That's indisputable. One of the things that I think is a real tragedy here, and I mentioned this, is in this wonderful book. By wonderful, I mean wonderfully informative. It's a horrifying book by Benjamin Ginsberg of Johns Hopkins University. It's called The Fatal Embrace. Mr. Ginsberg writes, to the very end, many German Jews could not believe that the German state would fail to protect them from the excesses of Nazi fanatics. The historical dependence of Jews upon the state gave rise to a Jewish philosophical tradition beginning in the 17th century with Spinoza, in which the state is glorified and seen essentially as a kind of parent worthy of total obedience. And that's the same gospel, if you will, statist gospel being preached here by the ADL, the state being a benevolent parent worthy of total obedience. I mean, of all people in the world, of all the people in the world who'd know better, you'd think this organization would know better.
But, of course, the thing is, the tradition of America was fear of government, limited power so the people can be free. And we're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. William Greig right here at Genesis.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high resolution, full color maps and full color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard to find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network. Dr. Stan at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is William Greig. Go right ahead, William.
Yeah, we were talking about how bitterly ironic it is that the self-described Anti-Defamation League, which proclaims as its mandate protecting the Jewish people from defamation and harm, has embraced a perspective on the question of individual firearms ownership that places it squarely on the side of the world's existing and historical tyrannical regimes, including, but of course not limited to, the late and unlamented National Socialist regime in Germany. The position of the ADL is essentially that the Second Amendment doesn't protect an individual right to keep and bear arms, and it certainly does not envision a state of affairs in which the armed people can reclaim their sovereignty from a government that has degenerated into a tyranny. That is a point of view with which the ADL takes violent exception. They say that there is simply no way that you could countenance the idea that the people would ever be able to rise up properly and in a moral sense, that the people would be able to rise up against government no matter how extreme it had become in its corruption and tyranny. In spite of the fact, once again, that that's exactly what our founding fathers did when they reclaimed their sovereignty from the King of Great Britain, and they explicitly, on many occasions, most conspicuously in Federalist Paper number 46, written by James Madison, they explicitly endorsed the idea that the fundamental and most important purpose of the right protected by the Second Amendment was to provide an ultimate check against the corruption and tyranny of government. The ADL, in its press release announcing its amicus brief, said that the Second Amendment dictates that state governments must, and I quote now from the ADL, protect their citizens' lives, liberty, and property by regulating the purchase and possession of firearms. And for regulating, we might as well read forbidding or prohibiting. Now, that's really interesting because, once again, that pretty much inverts perfectly the meaning of the Second Amendment. You know, what part of shall not be infringed do you not understand? A regulation is an infringement. And so what you have here is the ADL saying that the Second Amendment says more or less exactly the opposite of what it actually says in English. Then in explaining their point of view, the ADL says the following, quote, gun violence and the caching of dangerous weapons are commonplace among extremists. If states lose the right to regulate firearms ownership, it would help violent bigots in their efforts to create an America based on hate and intolerance. Now, this is a statement that goes to something very important about the basic nature of the ADL. And that is that they are much more interested in enhancing the power of the state to crack down on groups and individuals the ADL considers to be their enemies than they are in protecting the individual rights of everybody from the state. They seem to assume that they can somehow aggrandize the power of government to do things that would be considered tyrannical by any rational measure. That they, it's a better idea to do this. They can somehow abet the growth of the power of government and control it in such a way that we'll always be acting in their interests as their servant. Now, I'm of the opinion that the ADL is pretty much an appendage of the power elite, that it does not have any separate or meaningful existence apart from the interests of the people who are running our government, that it doesn't represent the interests of the Jewish people or any other group of people. My Jewish friends like to say, if you have five Jews, you have 10 opinions, so it's not as if any one group can represent all of them on any issue. But they're certainly doing a disservice to the rights of all of us and to the individual rights of Jewish Americans when they start enhancing the power of government to do things that would be considered to be tyrannical. And their rationale for doing so is that this is necessary because somewhere in the hinterlands of Alabama or in the tenebrous woods of northern Idaho, there is a small group of misbegotten eccentrics who like to wear Klan regalia or neo-Nazi drag, and they say horrible things that somehow scare or at least disgust reasonable people. And because there are these handful of people who are prowling the hinterlands of America, the government must have the power to take away the rights of all of us with respect to the right to keep and bear arms, or that it must enhance its powers to crack down on what the ADL is pleased to call hate crimes. This is the same group of people, I should point out, that have been proselytizing on behalf of the Orwellian concept of hate crimes legislation now for about 20 years. And they have been catechizing local law enforcement for at least that long regarding the dangers, as they describe them, of so-called radical extremists. And the radical extremists would be, among other people, those of us who take the Constitution seriously, or who are concerned about national sovereignty, or who are perhaps just a little bit too well-informed about such things as the Federal Reserve, what it's doing to our money in terms of its value.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, William. We're going to be back here in just about 3 minutes to continue this discussion.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Where do you think one of the most toxic places on earth is? The answer may surprise you. It's in your body. The colon is a natural breeding ground for disease-producing germs. It may not sound like a very appealing subject, but it should not go ignored. For over a decade now, natural health expert Dr. Lauren Ritter has educated people everywhere about the benefits of internal cleansing. Now, these benefits include higher energy levels, more comfortable digestion, high immune support, and healthier looking skin. Now you can try Dr. Ritter's colon cleansing program from the privacy of your own home. It's safe and natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. Don't let your body be the most toxic place on earth. Take care of your health by cleansing your colon and body. Dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914. Call now to find out how you can get the colon and body cleanse risk-free for 30 days. Dial 1-800-457-9914. Call now.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here. Our guest is William Grieg. And before we go on with him, will you tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your blog, and perhaps how they can get your book?
All right. Well, on the first point, the website for which I work as an editor-at-large is called The Right Source. And the URL for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. That's one word, rightsourceonline.com. It's updated frequently, and that includes links and embedded links to and embedded video news items and audio items as well. If you go to the Right Source website, rightsourceonline.com, look in the upper left-hand corner of the page, you'll see my photograph, and that'll have a link to my blog, which is entitled Pro Libertate. And I try to update that between 3 and 5 times a week, depending upon how I'm doing. I'm just getting over a bout of viral bronchitis, and being right now, because of my wife's illness, a single parent to 5 kids with bronchitis, has somewhat thrown my writing schedule for a loop. And I really appreciate, by the way, the nutritional supplements you sent me. They've been wonderful. They've really cleared things up. I can actually speak again today, which is a borderline miracle.
But, well, I'm glad for that.
Yeah, Pro Libertate is updated as often as I can update it. And once again, you can access that by going to rightsourceonline.com. And it tends to be, my blog, a fully blown, documented opinion piece with hopefully some element of original research or original thought incorporated into what I'm writing. It's not a weblog in the sense that they're random, brief, sometimes disjointed observations on what's going on. I try to take a look at what's going on in the news, and then looking at what's going on at the surface, try to judge what's going on in terms of the plate tectonics of the political issues involved, get beneath the surface of the story and find out what's going on in the mantle, so to speak. And every once in a while, there will be a change of pace. I will write about things other than politics every once in a while, because you have to. Politics is supposed to be subordinate to more important things, and so I do write every once in a while about matters of faith and matters of culture. I have written, for instance, about astronomy in my blog, but that was a long, long time ago. There are just simply too many things going on that are so extravagantly wrong that I have to talk about them in the blog. As well, you can go to rightsourceonline.com and get to the e-zine, Pro Libertate. That's been dormant now for the better part of a year, simply because of a number of other things that have been going on and having so many irons in the fire. Right now we are getting another issue ready. I've got several essays that I'm editing, preparing to post on that e-zine. It's available for free through the Right Source website. And that's put out monthly, or at least we aspire to put that out monthly, as my schedule, the vagaries of my schedule permit. My new book is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. And if you go to my blog, there will be a link to an online site where you can purchase that. It's been available right now by way of an eBay auction that's been going on. We're not auctioning the books off. We're asking $10 a copy, just the cover price of the book. Within hopefully the next week or so, we will have it available for sale through the Right Source website. It will also be available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble as soon as we're able to iron out the logistics of getting the books to the retailers. But that has been available now for a couple of weeks, and from what I understand, through the limited outlets that we've been able to provide it, it's been selling very well. And Dr. Stan, I do promise that we're going to make that available so that you can make it available to your readers, your listeners as well.
Well, we'll look forward to it.
But we're talking about the ADL and the way that this group, which professes to be an organization committed to the estimable cause of protecting the Jewish people from defamation and actual physical harm, how they're actually, the ADL, promoting a doctrine of government that historically has been exceptionally injurious to people everywhere of all description, but to Jewish people in particular. I made mention of this book by Benjamin Ginsberg, The Fatal Embrace. That book is incredibly important. The text of it is available online, by the way, and I do have a link in my blog essay that will take you to the text of the book online. Benjamin Ginsberg, when he published that book about 14 years ago, wanted to examine a really perplexing problem. It's something I've often wondered about, which is the following. Why is it that time and time again throughout history you see this incredibly disheartening spectacle of Jewish people being slaughtered or otherwise horribly mistreated in large numbers by government? And what Ginsberg discovered as he looked at a number of case studies going back to ancient Babylon and through contemporary American society is this idea that Jews as a persecuted and somewhat outcast minority consistently have been encouraged by their leadership to snuggle up to the state and to abet its growth on the assumption that by doing the bidding of the state, they'd be able to cultivate the favor of the ruling elite, and they would be specially protected by the state. And so they follow this program faithfully until such time as there's a reaction. Either another faction comes to power, or the faction that had been in power turns against the interests of the Jewish people who had been living in this realm, and as a result, horrible things happen to Jewish people. And that happened throughout history, up to and including Germany during the Nazi period. And as I said a couple of segments ago, quoting Ginsberg, the assumption on the part of too many Jewish people in Germany was that, you know, the government has got to step in and protect us against these violent mobs of Nazi ruffians. Obviously, they're not going to let this happen. They're not going to let this go unchecked. At some point, the government is simply going to come to our rescue. I've got a really good friend in New York by the name of Bob Unger, who has a grandmother who lived through that period in German history. She managed to get out before it got really nasty. But the stories are told in their family about how one of the relatives is literally, she's being packed onto the cattle car to be sent to one of the concentration camps, is sternly looking at the Nazi official in charge of herding her onto this cattle car and saying, "You are going to be in such trouble when Herr Hitler finds out what you're doing." That was the assumption being cultivated in that part of the Jewish culture for decades or centuries. And here we have the ADL playing with that same assumption. They're without excuse. At this point in human history, they're without excuse for peddling that nonsense, talking about how we have to protect the supposed right of states to disarm their citizens so as to protect them from violent extremists when it is the state that is most likely to kill them. If you go back just a few years ago, I mentioned the Rwandan genocide in 1994. You can go back even more recently to Central Africa and see where the same dynamics are played out, where those whom the state would liquidate, it first disarms. I went to the 2001 gun control summit at the UN headquarters in New York, and there was a really interesting presentation by a man from, I believe it was Congo, talking about the fact that he was upset with the program of action being put out by the United Nations because it assumed that the only people who should be permitted to have possession of firearms would be police and military personnel. And he said that he wanted to do away with guns, but he was curious as to why they were creating a monopoly on the part of that part of the government that is always involved in all the horrible things that he saw back in his country. He said, those are the elements of our government that they're committing most of the firearms violence in our country, are the police and the military. Why are you leaving these people with a functional monopoly on firearms? Well, it's because of this assumption that government has to have a monopoly on the use of coercion. And almost every government on earth was founded on that premise. Ours was founded on exactly the opposite premise. The fundamental meaning of the Second Amendment is that the government has derivative and limited powers, and that the people retain, in their both as individuals and in the aggregate, the people retain the right to armed self-defense. They retain the right to justified and legal use of coercion to protect their rights. We're the only country on earth that ever was created on that premise and that enshrined that premise in its founding document. And now we're at a point where the meaning of the Second Amendment has been so thoroughly transposed by the ADL and by the legal community, by the ABA, by the federal courts and so forth, to where we're being told that the entire purpose of the Second Amendment was not to protect the individual right to armed self-defense, and not to protect the means of individual states should it be necessary to mount a resistance against a corrupt federal government. The fundamental meaning of the Second Amendment is that the states, acting as wholly owned franchises of the central government, have the unqualified right to disarm the civilian population so as to protect them against violent criminals in the private realm, when it's violent criminals in the government realm that do most of the damage.
Absolutely, and I think that people don't understand that the whole purpose of the Bill of Rights was to restrict the power of the government so men could be free.
Yeah, well, the whole purpose of the Constitution was to restrict the power of the government by enumerating those things it could do. And then, of course, the Bill of Rights was added as a supplementary protection. I believe it was Hamilton who called it an auxiliary protection. And by listing certain things that the government could not do and listing certain specific rights that would be protected in this way, the Bill of Rights does not offer an exhaustive index or an exhaustive inventory of rights. But what it does is to reiterate and reemphasize and italicize the fact that there are things that government simply cannot do, and it cannot do anything that it is not specifically empowered to do, which is another part of this equation that not many people appreciate. If the federal government had the power to confiscate our firearms, if it had the power to regulate our firearms, those things would be enumerated in the Constitution. There are no assumed or inferred powers. There are no powers that are not explicitly put in writing in the Constitution. One of the really important functions of the Second Amendment, and this is something I pointed out in the debate I had with the radio host about 6 or 7 years ago, feeling himself to be altogether more clever than he proved to be, he said, well, what about the Interstate Commerce Clause? Couldn't the federal government use the Interstate Commerce Clause in order to regulate the sale of firearms or even to prohibit the sale of firearms? I said, it could indeed use the Interstate Commerce Clause to do so, were it not for the Second Amendment. Because what the Second Amendment did by saying that the right could not be infringed was it collaterally forbade the exercise of that function through the Commerce Clause. You cannot have a Commerce Clause policy, in other words, that amounts to an infringement of the right protected by the Second Amendment. And so what it has to do with the commerce and guns, quite frankly, the hands of the Congress are tied by the Second Amendment. But the most important protection for the right to keep and bear arms resides in the fact that nowhere in the Constitution was the federal government, or any government for that matter, but the federal government specifically, given the power to confiscate the right of the individual to armed self-defense. Now, when we're looking at what's going on right now in terms of the militarization of law enforcement, which is one of the fundamental themes, one of the central themes, I should say, of my book, Liberty and Eclipse, militarization of law enforcement has put us into a position right now where we do have the equivalent of an army of occupation, the standing of our army of occupation, where once we had independent, separately and locally accountable police agencies and sheriff's departments. The incident that occurred in Colorado just recently, where this 62-year-old Vietnam veteran, former Army medic, had his house broken into by the local all-hazards response team, which is a SWAT team type of tactical outfit, and his 10-year-old son dragged away at gunpoint to the hospital because the kid had bumped his head and the father didn't think it was worth sending him on an ambulance to the emergency room to deal with it. That's a really good example of the sort of thing that our colonial forebears had in mind when they enacted the Third Amendment of the Constitution against quartering troops in our homes, and that's one of the things the Second Amendment was supposed to prevent as well. When they talked about being under the heel of a militarized tyranny, this is more or less what happened in Colorado. This is more or less what they had in mind as something to prevent. So we got to a point now where the Department of Homeland Security can fund these SWAT teams. And the SWAT team in Colorado that carried out this atrocity was completely funded by the Homeland Security Department. All the money to create that team, to train it, to outfit it, was provided by the Department of Homeland Security. I think they have a golf tournament every year in order to raise money in order to buy ammo. But apart from that, all the money comes from Washington. That is a literal army of occupation in that tiny community in rural Colorado. And it was simply itching for a chance to do something You have this incident where a 10-year-old kid suffered a trivial, dramatic but trivial injury. His father, being a former Army medic, was certainly capable and competent to deal with his kid's very minor injuries. He was providing to his child, for whom, of course, he had a greater personal investment than any bureaucrat would have. He was providing to his child more than adequate medical attention. He was doing exactly the same thing that a doctor would do. But because the state has this proprietary claim on children, and because this individual had been identified as a constitutionalist, that's an epithet being used to describe extremists who shouldn't have the right to keep their arms, according to the ADL and groups of that kidney. Because the father had been identified as a constitutionalist, the local sheriff sent in this federally funded and federally created paramilitary army to kick in his door and throw the parents to the ground, handcuff them, and hold the children at gunpoint while this traumatized 10-year-old is taken off to the hospital, where emergency workers certified that he was receiving exactly the right type of care. This is a snapshot of a country that is literally teetering on or falling down the sides of the abyss of absolute tyranny. And I don't think that our founding generation would have any difficulty recognizing in that incident and the hundreds like it that we see happening every year, the symptoms of a country that really is headed for abject despotism.
Well, I share your concern, and of course I really believe these things are happening because we've lost the moral foundation of our country, because most people do not understand the Constitution, and obviously the sheriff and the people who participated in that SWAT team do not understand the Constitution of the United States. One reason the father didn't want the son to go to the emergency room is because of the tremendous expense. You don't get out of the emergency room without $300 or $400 or $500, and why bother to put that out for a minor bump on the head?
I know.
And remember that God gave the children to the family, not to the government. But we seem to have substituted the government for the family.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, there's this sense of patria potestis on the part of the government. There's this Latin phrase, parens patriae, which means the parenthood of the state, that has been invoked in many court decisions, beginning, strangely enough, in the early 19th century. You can go all the way back to the early 1800s, and you can see that being insinuated into legal decisions by various judges. And by the second or third decade of the 20th century, there's already a truism that somehow the power of the parents, the authority of the parents in the home, was contingent, that their role was to carry out the functions that the government would ordain, because the government has, supposedly, a greater and more important and transcendent interest in the child than the parents do. And that's exactly the opposite of the founding philosophy of our country. That's the Jacobin philosophy of revolutionary France, where various revolutionary leaders would literally say that your children belong to the republic. What they called a republic was different from what our founding fathers called a republic.
Hey, we're out of time, William. It's been a pleasure to have you with us. Our guest has been William Grigg. And we look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.
Thanks. God bless.
God bless.
Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a 2-pack for only $99 or a 4-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Stand back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and this is the time I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help to continue doing what we're doing and reaching out across America 5 hours a day. And we have almost 60 outlets there. A lot of them are just half an hour a week. A lot of them are every day. But we need your help to continue doing what we're doing. So if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family, which I think is effective. It's reaching an awful lot of people. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WARP. And then, of course, we always want to tell you that if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it because it'll introduce you to this occult world that is out there. And then, of course, we have a three-pamphlet set. I think it's only $9.95, called The Occult Hierarchy, which is a summary of the articles that I and Dr. Dennis Cuddy had written about this world occult movement, which is what's behind the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and the Club of Rome and the Theosophists and the Rosicrucians and the Masons. And until you understand that there are other forces out there, nothing makes sense. You need, of course, to listen to my talk on The Forbidden Secret. It's on DVD, and, of course, it comes with a syllabus if you want to get that. But it will really give you tremendous insight into the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. And the fact that there really is another dimension out there, and until we recognize that, nothing going on makes sense. You certainly would want to get our four tape or four CD set on the supernatural and the book that goes with that, Johanna Michelson's The Beautiful Side of Evil. You'd want to get, of course, the book, The Hostage of the Devil, and then the interviews with Malachi Martin that go along with that book. And then, of course, you'd want to get the book Satanic Crimes and get the four tape or four CD set that goes with that. There really are satanic groups in America operating here, and they're doing everything they can to convince you they're not real. And, of course, the FBI will send people out to every community where there's talk about satanic crimes to convince the local police that there are no satanic groups. And yet, of course, David Berkovitz was part of a group, a satanic group, and the Process Church of the Latter-day Judgment, and so was Charles Manson, the same group, branches of the same group, as certainly was the Hillside Strangler down there. in Southern California, as are so many of the serial killers. So why is the government trying to convince us it's not real? We have a great book called The Diary of a Devil Hunter. A fellow was into Satanism and was going all over the country trying to tell the police force and groups what was going on, and the FBI was coming behind him to try to convince everybody it wasn't real. You need to get this video on Operation Monarch, the DVD we have on that. You need to get we have a set. We have a CD. I think it's got 18,000 pages of government documents on MK Ultra and other mind control programs of the government. That's a CD that with 18,000 pages of government suppressed information, which is only now available. And then, of course, we hope many of you out there will certainly go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and look at all the other things we have there, and hope you'll want to get them and disseminate them and help us educate people about the spiritual battle that's underway, a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, certainly we remember our website is www.RadioLiberty.com. You can see a lot of our DVDs there. You can certainly see on the newsletters we've written. You can listen to our radio programs there 9 hours a day and not get much of anything accomplished. But then please pray for America and pray for revival and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be right back here in just a moment for the next hour of Radio Liberty.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video Sheltering in Place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. So, Joel, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's good to be with you. There's a major Supreme Court case brewing on the Second Amendment, and it's really interesting how the Supreme Court has, for many years, left undecided the essential interpretive case on the Second Amendment of whether or not this is a collective right as citizens, as part of a militia, as the liberal courts have long promoted, or whether or not it's an individual right, as the literal interpretation of the Second Amendment says. Well, showing its true colors again, the Bush administration is making a concerted effort to make sure the Supreme Court does not restrict the government's power to limit gun rights based on the Second Amendment. And which reads, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, it doesn't say the right of the state, it doesn't say the right of the militia, it's the right of the people to keep and bear arms, because, as most people in this arena know, everyone used their own private weapons in the militia, so it was essential to tie the right of the people to bear arms and use those arms in the use of a militia. But gun advocates want the Supreme Court to interpret the Second Amendment formally as a collective right attached only to militia or police service, not an individual right. And most liberal courts, you know, have taken this position until only recently. There's one or two that have said that it's an individual right. Now it's time for the Supreme Court to step up and finally affirm either the plain language of the Bill of Rights or to assert what gun control advocates have always wanted, to take away it, the right as an individual right. But whether or not they do so really depends a lot on the hidden globalist agenda that controls all three branches of government. And that doesn't mean it's a slam dunk against the Second Amendment. The powers that be may not want to antagonize a major portion of the conservative movement during an election cycle. And that certainly would happen if they did away with all Second Amendment rights. So I think that they're going to take a middle-of-the-road position. And it's interesting that the Bush administration, which has always proclaimed to be pro-gun, has no such inhibitions about in their last waning months to do everything they can to damage the liberties from our Constitution before stepping down. So instead of writing a strong brief affirming the Second Amendment as an individual right, they're helping defend, believe it or not, the D.C. ban as an adjunct to a larger power to restrict guns. So the administration is adding a friend to the court brief using the ubiquitous excuse of public safety, once again, to justify unlimited government intrusion into this basic self-defense right. And it is always an unlimited intrusion unless specific limiting language is present that limits the government's ability to regulate. And there is no such language present. So since unrestricted private ownership of guns clearly threatens the public safety, according to the Solicitor General, the Second Amendment can be interpreted to allow a variety of gun restrictions. Well, there's simply no language at all talking about regulatory abilities of the federal government.
Going to be really very interesting to see how the new Supreme Court justices rule in this case. And, of course, since they were appointed by George Bush, who was only pretended to be in favor of gun rights and is really, of course, intent upon the all-powerful state. It's going to be very, very interesting decision, but of course we know what the Second Amendment says. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So whatever the Supreme Court does, why, of course, we know what the Second Amendment says. Our Constitution is based upon not what the judges say, although that may be put into law, but it's really, we know what it says, we know what was meant, and it was meant that men should be free. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. And we're going to be talking about initially about this case that's going to the Supreme Court, which is going to determine whether or not the local community has the right to take away the individual right to keep and bear weapons. And, of course, this deals with with Washington, D.C., which is the murder capital of the world, where the people want the right to have weapons to defend themselves in their homes. The only people who have weapons in Washington, D.C. are the criminals, and that's why they have so much crime there and rape and pillage. And of course, it's interesting, even many of the police officers feel that the people need to have weapons in their homes. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the Supreme Court does. When were they going to hear this, Joel?
Well, they're going to hear that, they're presenting briefs right now. I don't know exactly when the oral hearings are, but it should be within the next couple of weeks.
All right, it's going to
be. In any case, we'll soon find out, but you know, this Paul D. Clement is a real problem. Of course, Kurt Nimmo and others seek to put this blame on him, particularly because he was an understudy of neocon Lawrence Silverman, a federal judge who co-chaired the Iraq Intelligence Commission. You know, that was the one that whitewashed the minimum impact of neocon lies about Iraq and going to war in Iraq. Clement also clerked for Judge Scalia and any of these people who clerk for them. You know, Supreme Court justices often come away more liberal than they went in there. But I think Clement is clearly carrying out the administration policy that always has had globalist overtones. Clement cited the federal ban on machine guns and dangerous types of firearms and endorsed restrictions on gun ownership by drug users, criminals, and those subject to restraining orders, and mentally unstable persons. But, you know, some of these things are are legitimate, but what I'm saying is that you have to have criteria for restricting a fundamental right. And there are always general criteria to the concept of fundamental rights, criteria which limit them, and that general criteria is you can only exercise those fundamentals insofar as your exercise of the rights doesn't infringe on someone else's exercise of the fundamental rights. So, a fundamental right of to keep and bear arms can be broadly defended with the stipulation that one isn't attempting to take the life wrongfully of another person with that fundamental. In other words, it has to be a defense right, not an offense right. And those things can be clearly laid out into law, and therefore, gun ownership by criminals is obviously can be enjoined.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Scholder is simply pointing out that this case is going to be going to the courts very, very soon, and, of course, how this will be addressed. I think it's important for our listeners to understand that there are those who would disarm the American people. And just as exactly as the people of Rwanda were disarmed before they were slaughtered, the people of Armenia following the First World War were disarmed before they were slaughtered, the Jews in Germany were disarmed before they were slaughtered, the people of Russia were disarmed before they were slaughtered and sent off to the Gulag, the people of China were disarmed before the Chinese communists began to slaughter them. Why do they want to take away our weapons? Are they really worried about the children and accidents? No. I mean, there may be some idealists and foolish people who are, but history tells us that tyrants always want to disarm the people before they can impose their tyranny. And before the massacres began, people say that could never happen here. And I would ask the simple question, why not? If God is just, why shouldn't we come under the same tyranny that we have led to happen in so many countries? Because it was America that brought communism to China. It was America that stood by while they were slaughtering the people in Rwanda. 800,000 Christians were slaughtered there and did nothing about the Turkish slaughter of the Armenians or the German slaughter of the Jews and was financing Russia when they were slaughtering their own people. Why should we expect that God would intervene and prevent it from happening here? So go right ahead, Joe.
Well, of course, they always use these worst-case scenarios to justify restrictions on the whole. They use murders in D.C. to justify taking away guns from everyone. But, in fact, that takes away people's right to defend themselves against criminals. As you and I both know, a gun on the hand is much better than a policeman on the phone. When you've got a criminal right there threatening to do you harm. Gun ownership by drug users, for example, can be enjoined on the fact that this is a criminal activity. But some of the problematic areas are like restraining orders. Anybody with a restraining order, well, some wives are very, very vindictive when they're getting ready to divorce someone. And whether or not they have legitimate reason to fear, it's often a lawyer-type tactic to the judge and tell them that you fear for them. Get a restraining order, and it can happen to very honest, good, nonviolent husbands. And it has happened. My brother went through a divorce and had this happen and had his weapons taken away from him and had a very difficult time getting them back. A very mild-mannered person had a very evil wife. You see what I'm saying? These things, to make to a blanket statement to say that everyone under a restraining order loses their gun rights is to disenfranchise a good percentage of men who are not violent. And even worse are this mentally unstable persons. It would be fine if we had some decent criteria that truly made sure that these were unstable people, and they're unstable to drive, they're unstable sometimes to walk down the street. But, you know, instability is the weapon of tyranny. The Soviets used that in putting people into crazy houses who were anti-government people and turning them crazy with drug injections, truth serum, and other things, too. They've got some terrible mind control drugs that they developed in the Soviet Union. And, you know, mentally unstable, quote, people is particularly galling. Without proper criteria, can be used to disallow gun ownership to anyone the government says harbors irrational government, anti-government ideas. And currently, you know, the Bush administration is pushing legislation to apply a gun ban to all veterans who suffer any mental trauma at all from wars caused by them being forced to go there by our own government and not being given proper treatment. And, of course, you know, as if anyone who suffers mental trauma is mentally unstable. Not true, but slowly but surely they're trying to develop criteria to disenfranchise most people from having guns, and then the rest of us are going to make sure that we all have to have permits, or that is government permission to exercise a Second Amendment right, which is a fundamental right. Now, you know, Clement does pay some lip service, some soft lip service to individual gun rights. I suspect he's aiming at the hunting thing. He says the Second Amendment, quote, protects an individual right to possess firearms, including for private purposes unrelated to militia operations. Now, notice that, and then he also noted that the D.C. ban probably goes too far. Well, probably. That tells a lot about this half-hearted defense of the Second Amendment. You know, if Clement really wanted to solidify the gun rights issue, as the Bush administration has an opportunity to do, he would have stated clearly that the main purpose of the founders in giving the people both to bear arms and to engage in militia activity is to protect against government tyranny as well as external or internal uprisings as the broadest form of one's individual fundamental right of self-defense. What Clinton is hinting at in the other, quote, private purposes he acknowledges is merely the right to go hunting. So self-defense against intruders in government as a public is a public purpose, which he's reluctant to affirm. And, of course, he continues this fuzzy logic when he says that the Second Amendment, quote, properly understood, does not call for invalidation of numerous federal laws regulating firearms. Well, it does and it doesn't. I mean, some of them, like an outright ban, it does invalidate. In other words, as Kurt Nimmo complains, according to Clement and the neocons, you have a right to possess firearms under the Constitution, while at the same time the government has the right to take them away. I mean, can you imagine the contraposition of that? So this is a real problem, and unfortunately it doesn't look like the Bush administration is going to defend us in this realm. Next subject is on surveilling the Internet. You know, it's all the rage now. The nation's top spy, Michael O'Connor, thinks the threat of cyber Armageddon is so great that the U.S. government should have unfettered and warrantless access to the U.S. citizens' Google search histories, private emails, file transfers, and everything else going down the Internet pipeline in order to spot, quote, cyber terrorists in our midst. Well, that's according, of course, to a new 18-page story by the Director of National Intelligence in The New Yorker. In the piece, McConnell returns in flamboyant style, says Lawrence Wright, to his exaggerating ways, hyping threats and statistics to further his bureaucratic aims. Well, it's not bureaucratic. These are, once again, globalist aims at surveilling the populace, just like disarming them. As I reported before, however, they're already doing this. It's very interesting that they bring up this phony legislation to, quote, modify the FISA Surveillance Act, presumably to catch terrorists. And now they want to modify the law to give them power to surveil the Internet, but they're already doing it. The entire lawsuit against AT&T and others is about allowing the NSA to install a fiber optic splitter on the main Internet trunk line so that they can record and analyze everything it has already in place, Dr. Stan. This is a red herring.
I have no question. I think that they've been doing it for a long time. I think that what they're doing is much to do about nothing, because I think that they have invaded our privacy. They've been listening to our telephone calls and our emails and reading our faxes for a long time. But, of course, they want to pretend, of course, they're so concerned about privacy.
Of course, this is merely one more step in the process of getting the public accustomed to the inevitability of making this type of tyranny incrementally legal. And I think that's all they're doing. They're already doing it, and they're just incrementally moving one step at a time to get people to buy into making it legal.
And well, of course, it's already, of course, we're being told it's to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding over there in a cave in Pakistan with a laptop computer on his lap, plotting on how he's going to take away our freedom. And in the meantime, of course, the real person who's taking away our freedom is our own government, collecting dossiers on all of the citizens, collecting information on all of the citizens, sending out intrusive questionnaires to many of the citizens, and, of course, listening in on our conversation. So, you know, When are the American people going to understand that if there really was a threat from terrorism, the first thing they would have done was sealed our southern border. The second thing they would have done was made sure that every airline pilot was armed and there was an air marshal on every plane except instead of about one in ten. I mean, they know this whole thing is as phony as a $3 bill. And why don't the American people ever look around and say, hey, if the terrorists are out there trying to kill us and are all these people willing to commit suicide to kill us, why haven't there been any attacks in America in almost 7 years?
And why haven't they been walking across an open border and pulling off small minor attacks like they do in Israel?
And, of course, they could certainly go ahead and derail our trains, you know, as they go across areas where there are very, very few people. They could
blow up electrical pylons, cut off electricity to major cities.
Or they could go ahead and start forest fires. I mean, there's so many things that the terrorists could do. And, of course, we're simply being lied to. We've got, 6 or 7 million Muslims in the United States, and only a very, very few of them have been talked into even suggesting they do something violent by FBI agent provocateurs.
Well, you know, and one of the reasons why, which leads me to believe that terrorism is a controlled entity, is the fact that if it were a non-controlled enemy, there would be nothing stopping terrorists from coming across the border. The mere fact that they aren't coming across and they aren't doing terrorist attacks, which are cheap, you know, this whole thing about waiting till they can do some big pie-in-the-sky terrorist event like 9/11 is something only black operations from big governments can do. Real terrorists can't pull off something like that, like loading three buildings with explosives. I mean, from top to bottom, and having to shut down and deny access to people for 2 days while they do it. I mean, that's what happened in 9/11, and they can't be ascribed to terrorists. But nevertheless, if they did have real terrorism and they were streaming across the border, what would happen? The government would be forced to close the border. So the mere fact that they aren't having anyone across, and the government has an agenda not to close the border, it's very good evidence that they are the ones, in essence, giving out the word to their top controllers in Al-Qaeda, don't touch the American border. We don't want to have people crying to close the border.
And, of course, why are we funding Pakistan, which actually funded both the Taliban and Al-Qaeda initially, and they're still funding them? I mean, there's no question that the ISI, Pakistani intelligence, is funding the Taliban or killing our boys over there in Afghanistan. Why would we do something that foolish? We're going to be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen right here at Radio Liberty. Well, go right ahead, Joel.
Well, in other news, the world woke up to some startling speeches by President Bush in the Middle East, continually one nation after another describing Iran as the world's leading state-sponsored terrorist and calling upon Arab allies to help its administration curb the threat of Iran, quote, before it's too late. You know, in one speech after another, he continued to say Iran's actions threaten the security of nations everywhere. I mean, this is just ludicrous. I mean, yet he's saying nothing about Russia, who's got, you know, thousands of nuclear weapons and is continuing to build them in violation of all treaties. He says nothing about China, who's got nuclear weapons and a military so massive that it is a threat to nations everywhere. Bush says, so the United States is strengthening our long-standing security commitments to our friends in the Gulf and rallying friends around the world to confront this danger before it's too late. It is very, very obvious that Bush is intending to attack Iran still and, you know, obviously looking for provocation, which didn't come in
Skin. Night Skin was made by Dr. Arthur Perry, a board-certified cosmetic surgeon, as an alternative to some invasive surgeries. It has real ingredients that have been shown to reduce the signs of aging and fight natural sun damage, all while you get a good night's sleep. Try Night Skin today and see what it's like to wake up feeling renewed, both inside and out.
Try Night Skin risk-free by calling 1-800-457-9914. Night Skin is guaranteed to renew your skin overnight. Turning back the clock has never been this easy. Try Night Skin risk-free today. Dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. And Joel was just expressing his concern that because of the rhetoric that the president has been using on his trip to the Middle East, attacking Iran and accusing it of being a terrorist organization or terrorist state that threatens the stability of the entire world, and that all the nations of the world are endangered by little Iran because, of course, sometime they might get a nuclear weapon there. And, of course, Joel feels, and I certainly agree with him, that this is a prelude to war with Iran. And even though the National Intelligence briefing that came out recently, National Intelligence Report, had suggested that Iran has given up its effort to build nuclear weapons, that is in no way, of course, discouraged the president, who is intent upon expanding the war in the Middle East. So go ahead, Joel.
You know, there's a tremendous amount of hype in the election and elsewhere on the Islamic fascist threat to the Western world, talking about a war of civilizations. And when you look at it from a historical point of view, it is very, very clear that because of the corruption within the Muslim empire, because of the corruption in their leaders, and the very poor state of their education system, the way in which in their hierarchical suppression within society, women and even youth are not allowed to get access to real good education. The Islamic peoples have never and are not capable in a modern world of doing anything without the instigation and support of Western nations, whether all of their technology comes from the West. There isn't any significant technological effort that's been developed in the Middle East. Accepting Israel. So, to say that these people are a threat is just simply not true. In terms of crushing the world civilization, except in as much as they're used as cannon fodder as part of the agenda, the evil agenda of other major powers. And that's the way it's always been since World War I and World War II. Is you arm the Arabs. And then you betray them, and you arm them, and you betray them, and you keep them under your thumb. Because without a sugar daddy for arms and money, well, of course, they've got their own money now, but even that came from the West, developing their oil potential and then allowing them to take it away. You can't tell me that these nations could not have stopped Saudi Arabia from nationalizing the oil. Saudi Arabia is not and was not at that time able to defend itself. Even Britain could have conquered Saudi Arabia in defense of the contracts of their British nationals which were confiscated under nationalization. But they have been able to work wonders in the globalist empire by using these Arab nations as their surrogates, and that's one of the reasons why they keep them going. But in terms of being an individual threat to Western civilization, it's just simply more hype than reality. Now, it's becoming more reality, in fact, because we are arming them. The French have been arming them. The Germans have been arming them. All of their technology comes from the West, including the United States. And now we're instigating all of the hatred against ourselves through this constant, nonstop intervention. And so it's becoming like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You hype Islamic fascism, and you feed them the arms, and you antagonize them, and sure enough, it comes through.
But of course,
it never would happen alone.
But of course, the thing is that now Pakistan has nuclear weapons. How many they have, we don't know. But certainly, you know, those could certainly be unleashed and create terrible havoc, not only in the Middle East, but certainly as far as Israel is concerned.
Yes, but of course, the retaliation is capable is, you know, would be a great deterrent to them. And certainly Israel is capable of retaliating massively. And so it really is the Pakistani people that would suffer more than the Israelis.
Absolutely. But it would certainly create a terrible, terrible problem. But we're not dealing with rational people who are really concerned about all the suffering that that a nuclear war would bring about. That's what bothers me. We're not dealing with rational people.
Often that is true when we're talking about some of these radical Arab terrorist leaders. On the Western side, however, they're perfectly rational, but we have some real systematic evil in the terms of these globalists and these neocons who really don't care who they destroy. I mean, these people pulled off a 9/11 terrorist attack killing 3,000 Americans. These people, under Roosevelt, killed over 3,000 Americans at Pearl Harbor because he knew it was coming. He induced it to happen. He's responsible.
Amen. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen, and we're going to be exploring the various issues that are covered in the most recent World Affairs Brief. And, of course, if you don't go to World Affairs Brief every morning, www.worldaffairsbrief, why, you're missing a wonderful opportunity to get an overview of what's going on in the world. And every morning after I do my emails, why, I go to World Affairs Brief and scroll down. Fascinating information. We'll tell you in a few moments how you can, of course, get Joel's analysis of his weekly analysis of what's going on in the world.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes Scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, Abigail's Attic. Tactio is the most exciting advance in media entertainment to come along in 50 years. Imagine not only hearing your favorite music, but also feeling it. Far beyond listening with just your ears, Tactio allows you to actually feel the music you're listening to. Tactio enhances and amplifies all the sensations that we enjoy when we listen to music. Just plug in your media player into Tactio and experience the most unbelievable sensation of energy and vitality while you feel the music rush through your body. You have to feel it to believe it. Call 888-891-1122. That's 888-891-1122. Or visit tactio.com. That's TACTIO.com. Keep listening to GCN for information on future Abigail's Attic concerts featuring Tactio and learn how you can save 50% on your Tactio purchase. Tactio is a registered trademark of JW Labs, makers of Rife Instruments since 1987.
We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, of course, is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And before we go on, Joel, I would like you to tell our listeners once again how they can get a copy of World Affairs Brief and perhaps subscribe to it.
Well, the World Affairs Brief is showcased on my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's plural, worldaffairsbrief.com. And you get a summary of the brief, and at the end it tells you that to get a sample of the summary, because the brief, it comes out by subscription only. There is a modest charge for that to support my work. But you can get samples to see if you'd like to subscribe by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com.
And, of course, it's probably the most inexpensive newsletter that you can possibly find, and it's certainly one of the best ones. I look forward to reading it every week when it comes. So you were talking about Romney, and, of course, Romney's win in Michigan has made him one of the major contenders for the Republican nomination for the presidency. So pick this story up.
Well, and, of course, it's very obvious. I pointed this out in last week's brief, and I'll be covering it again this week, that the media is doing everything it can to stop the search for Romney. And this is very strange, because Romney's positions are all establishment positions. They differ very little from McCain or Giuliani. And yet, the establishment's dead set against him and dead set for McCain and Giuliani. Giuliani is just really floundering right now, and so they've created a surge for McCain to make sure that Romney doesn't accrue the top winner status, the strong enough winner status that he'll accrue all of the get on the bandwagon feeling of the majority of middle of the road Republicans who generally vote by who the media, you know, tells them is winning. You know, this was, but Romney, the media was saying, well, it was Romney's business sense, his ability to really explain the economy to his people in Michigan that got him the victory. Well, it's just not true. This was just bad, old-fashioned pandering to a depressed economic area, promising federal help through avoiding the word bailout. Romney's not claiming he's going to bail out any of the corporations like Chrysler, but I wouldn't put it past that being changed later on. Romney's not taking the high road like Ron Paul does, who would never stoop to promising benefits. Of course, sadly, this makes Ron Paul much less electable and easier for the establishment to dismiss. But Romney's playing the establishment game with the best of them. And that's their problem. That is the establishment's problem with Romney. You know, he's playing their game. And he's not playing Ron Paul's game, which is to promise real change and that business as usual in Washington is a gross violation of the Constitution. Romney's going right along with him. He tries to appeal to a wide audience. The election insiders are having to promote three different candidates at different times in order to stop the various broad aspects of Romney's appeal. First, they're continuing to use Governor/Pastor Mike Huckabee's pull within evangelical Christians to undercut Romney's support among conservative Christians. And this, however, is only and will only be viable during the primaries of the southern states and states like Iowa, which have a large percentage of fundamentalist Christian voters. It won't work once the Christian voters have to choose between two top candidates like Romney and McCain or Romney and Giuliani. They'll go for Romney just because the others are worse. How much worse? Only the far right really knows. You know, Huckabee can't possibly win against Clinton anyway, because independents and liberals fear his, quote, changing the Constitution to match God's law statement, even though this was just campaign rhetoric telling his people what they want to hear. You know, Huckabee didn't do anything in Arkansas really to promote the Christian agenda, and really did follow the globalist agenda. But the powers that be don't want any more God in American life, even if only verbally acknowledged. So they have to dump Huckabee as soon as he's done doing his job, which is to undercut Romney's support among fundamentalist Christians. Now, second, the media manipulators are organizing this phony bandwagon search, newspaper endorsements prior to Iowa on behalf of McCain. This is done in order to compete against Romney's attraction to the liberal moderate ring of the Republican Party. Now, that strategy failed in Iowa, but they were able to hold over that so-called surge so that it could succeed in New Hampshire. And that was only done because Democrats and independents crossed over and voted in the Republican primary. Among Republicans in New Hampshire, Romney pulled higher. In Michigan, which was a test of McCain's appeal to Republicans because there weren't hardly any Democrats and independents that crossed over, McCain failed, despite the endorsement of a former Michigan governor. So Republicans know all too well that McCain is a social liberal and they don't tend to vote for him. So third, the establishment is waiting, just in case McCain fails, to pick Giuliani back up again, to get him back in the race. They're waiting for Florida and Super Tuesday. These are larger states, have a much higher degree of corruption built into the voting machinery. So they just may be able to pull off a, quote, miracle for Rudy. But that's a big if and a big risk. As the exit polls are the growing nemesis to vote fraud. And that's because, you know, you can't distort the vote so much that the exit polls of what people are actually saying when they're coming out of the booth differ from what the count is. I mean, people are watching like hawks for vote fraud. So it kind of limits them to about the 10 to 15% range, because that's a range in which they, like in New Hampshire, can explain the great difference between polls and results. They can explain that away. And that's usually enough for people. You know, it's usually enough to win or to put someone over the top that they need to by being able to distort 10 to 15%. But what the establishment can't explain away are Giuliani's very low vote numbers, which make earlier pre-election polls giving him nearly 50% of support look like outright lies. So the word is out. Giuliani is corrupt. He's a cross-dresser. He's a womanizer. At government security expense, by the way. And pro-abortion. And no amount of media downplay can stuff that cat back in the bag. Even Ron Paul, the establishment's archenemy, the hero of the anti-war and pro-constitutional movement, outpolled Giuliani in both Iowa and Michigan, and came close to beating him in New Hampshire. In Michigan, Dr. No got more than 52,000 votes, or 6.3% of the total Republican ballot. That was double Giuliani's numbers. Giuliani's campaign is so broke, and his staff is working without salary. That can't go on for long. And Ron Paul is flush with money. I mean, this, who would have thought, Dr. Stan?
Well, it's an exciting time, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, you know, Paul also beat former Senator Fred Thompson of Tennessee. If Thompson doesn't pull off a win in South Carolina, which is unlikely due to the media push for Huckabee, he will have to bow out of the race soon as well. My old boss at the Conservative Digest, Richard Vigory, he's the conservative fundraising wizard, has launched a new website to support Ron Paul. I say bravo, Richard, because he was really a pretty... You know, he fought me when I wanted to do all this polling on his conservative list to see who would really be willing to take a strong constitutional stand. He was more of a mainstream Republican. He has turned around. He's called Paul the only truly principled conservative in the grand tradition of Robert Taft, Barry Goldwater, and Ronald Reagan. Paul just keeps picking up his 6 to 10% each time there's a vote. Well, that won't be enough to win, unfortunately, but it will give Congressman Paul some negotiating power at the convention over who is finally picked. And it might also translate into a third-party run, which his ardent supporters will surely demand, in my opinion. Being able to pull 5 to 10% of the votes nationally could deny a win to the Republican in the general election, And while most conservatives are used to voting for, quote, the lesser of two evils, they don't realize that the movement would be better to have even Hillary Clinton as president than another globalist Republican. At least conservatives would begin to fight against the legislative and globalist agenda that she would pursue. With a Republican, they always go along. I repeat that the only reason I think the powers that be want Hillary as the Democratic nominee is to create sufficient backlash within the hate Hillary movement to elect another globalist Republican, because they wouldn't do it with George Bush's having poisoned people against the Republicans and neocons. They can't win, in my opinion, unless you get a worse Democrat up there, and Hillary is the worst you can get.
I agree with that. Go right ahead.
But a Ron Paul independent candidacy could put a monkey wrench in that plan, and it could very well deny a Giuliani or McCain the election. And, you know, I've had a conversation this week with Lou Moore, Ron Paul's campaign chairman, and there's still a possibility. This coming out, Ron is very tired. He's just working his fingers to the bone. He needs all the support we can give him and your listeners can give him. He's done a yeoman's work towards building a movement, and we need to, we can't let Ron down. There's been quite a disgruntled movement within the Ron Paul campaign over Ron's having to openly deny conspiracy theory in his last two major appearances on television. I talked to Lou Moore about that. He said that he's aware and you know, it's a discontent within the movement. He and Ron both know, however, that the media was laying in wait for him to try to induce him into coming out with anything that could be construed as pro-conspiracy theory. They didn't dare go there, which is very wise. But I made the point, as I did on your show last time I talked, that it would have been sufficient for him at least to say, well, I don't know all the answers, but I do know that the 9/11 Commission did not even get close to the truth, and that has spawned many of these conspiracy theories. And I pledge as president, I would suggest to Ron, I pledge then that I will hold a real honest investigation, and I will make sure the 9/11 truth people get heard. Now, they couldn't crucify him for that. He'd just say everybody deserves a hearing, and that's very much in line. Lou Moore did point out to me that Ron Paul has said that in many other interviews, just not the big ones. He was under the gun, wanting to get away from the topic, obviously, and didn't mention it. So probably won't make that mistake again.
Okay, fine. Well, now, what's the next subject?
Well, still continuing a little bit on what to expect here. You know, Romney is being careful to play where he can win. He's basically conceding the South Carolina primary, which is another high concentration of evangelicals, and is concentrating on Nevada, which has nearly as many Republican delegates at stake, and yet is much more friendly to him. Few are aware that Nevada, despite its corrupt nightlife reputation, has a high concentration of normal people with normal day jobs, including thousands of Mormons. A high percentage of the state is populated by Mormons, who are supporting Romney in very high numbers, except for the minority of Nevada Mormons who are followers of constitutional scholar W. Clarence Skousen, who is my uncle. These are almost all universally backing Ron Paul. So we could very well see a Romney-Paul 1-2 punch in that state, and that would be big news. Romney gets first place and Paul gets second. The big casino operators are naturally backing the Democrats. No surprise there. You know, one of the interesting articles I picked up from WorldNet Daily was written by Ann Coulter, and I'm usually very loath to quote Ann Coulter, the neocon cheerleader, and but she did a good job in researching on this same topic about the media denouncing Romney and how strange it is, given that his position is very much like the main. Of course, she wouldn't admit that. She is a Romney fan, which I am not. But she did point out that New York Times columnist Frank Rich, who's normally pro-homosexual, very, very liberal, is out there fronting on the attack for Romney, and as she said, Rich is in a swoon over Mike Huckabee. Now, this is very strange because Mike Huckabee, of course, is a fundamentalist pastor, and that's something that Frank Rich would normally just drive him up a wall. And yet he's, he's got on the bandwagon of promoting Huckabee. This can only mean, in my opinion, that, this media play for Huckabee has the approval of the establishment, temporarily at least, and it's aimed at Romney.
Well, Chris, when Mike Huckabee was asked who his foreign policy advisor was, he said Richard Haass. Now, that wouldn't mean much to most people, but Richard Haass is the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. And that would suggest that, Huckabee has certainly compromised his position in going right along with the CFR. His article in Foreign Affairs magazine appeared this month. And, of course, Foreign Affairs is a theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. So I can see why Frank Rich, who worked for the New York Times, which is a CFR-controlled publication, would embrace Romney. Embrace Huckabee, because establishment's quite at ease with the thought of his candidacy. They may dump him, as you say, but certainly they're not going to criticize him right now.
That's right. As Colter said, I haven't seen Rich this excited over a candidate since they announced Hairspray was coming to Broadway, a weird Broadway play. Rich has continued to hyperventilate over populist charmer Huckabee, even after it came to light that Huckabee had called homosexuality an abomination. Normally, any aspersions on sodomy or any favorable mentions of Christianity would lead to at least a dozen hysterical columns by Frank Rich. This is very, very true. It indicates this push for Huckabee by liberal columnists is very much done for ulterior motives, and that motive is to kill the Romney campaign. She continues to say, curiously, however, Huckabee's Christianity doesn't seem to bother Rich. In column after column, Rich hails Huckabee as the only legitimate leader of the Republican Party. Of all the Republican candidates for president, Romney and Giuliani are the only ones who ought to be elected in pro-choice districts. Romney governed as a pro-lifer and has been viciously attacked by pro-abortion groups. By contrast, Giuliani cleverly avoids the flip-flopper label by continuing to embrace baby killing. As she says, Rudy flip-flops only in trivial matters like immigration and his own marital vows. Pretty good writer. At worst, she says, Romney will turn out to be a moderate Republican. Actually, I think it's much worse if he continues down the path to globalist intervention and torture that will take us into World War II. His ignorant going along with their agenda could, in fact, have much worse provocations. Yes, he will always be a moderate Republican. But, people who are trying too hard to fit in with the establishment are all too willing to continue to think they're moderate, even when they're taking positions like mandatory health care, which is anything but a moderate position. This would be considered a radical position if it were done by Hillary Clinton. She is correct. He's high IQ, articulate, moral, wildly successful Republican, and of the five top Republican candidates for President, Romney's the only one who hasn't dumped his first wife or his second, as in the case of Giuliani.
Well, we're out of time. No, we got about three more minutes here. So anyway, our guest today, of course, has been Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief, and let me once again recommend you go to www.worldaffairsbrief first thing every morning, as I do, and pull down the information. It'll give you an analysis of what's going on across America, and information you're not going to get in many instances from the controlled media. So we'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up today's program right here at Radio Liberty.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit it, you can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. You're cold, shivering, and you just emerged from your nice warm house. Imagine how car door locks feel after being out all night. When I come back, I'll tell you how to deal with those icy locks.
I'm Bobby Likas, and I've discovered a fountain of youth for cars. One reason our cars get old before their time is the same thing that keeps them going, fuel. The carbon deposits left by fuel burned in your engine can choke off its air in fuel mixture, reducing efficiency. The BG Fuel Service removes harmful carbon buildup, dramatically improves power and mileage, and includes BG44K to treat the entire fuel system. To learn more, go to BGFindTheShop.com.
BG.
If Mr. Freeze escaped from Gotham City and played a dirty trick on your door locks last night, here is a don't and a couple of do's to get you on your way. Don't force your key. It won't work. Instead, try the other door. It may not be frozen since temperatures can vary over short distances, depending on wind and sun. Also, keeping lock de-icer on hand is a smart idea. Just remember not to store it inside your car. Then to help prevent freezing, squirt a little WD-40 on locks after a car wash. This will displace the moisture in the lock and help it last longer. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us! In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Blockit fabric's got you covered. That's Blockit by Kimberly Clark.
Too much. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's over simply saying that there is a website out there that lists the corporate giving and all of the big corporations, all of them associated with the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, are giving money not only to both parties, they're giving money to almost every candidate except for Ron Paul. They're giving money to certainly on the Democratic side, to Clinton, to Obama, and to Edwards. On the Republican side, to McCain and to Giuliani and to Thompson and certainly to Huckabee and to Romney. They're giving money to all the people on both sides, and of course it's simply to maintain this myth that we have elections and the people are electing the president. No, we are electing their president, not our president. And when whoever wins the election, it will be their candidate, not ours. Understand that this is how the game is played, and we will have an election every 4 years so that people can throw the rascals out, but nothing will change as far as the domestic and foreign policy, because the ultimate objective is a one-world government, the destruction of our sovereignty, a one-world religion, and a new world leader. Well, this is the time when I have to mention Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we reach out 5 hours every day on some almost 60 outlets every single month as we try to educate the American people about the truth, about the spiritual battle that's taking place, and the powerful spiritual forces behind the political process and the educational process and the financial process. So if you haven't read my material on the occult hierarchy that rules the world, we have a 3-pamphlet set. It's inexpensive, a compilation of our letters. Of course, you can simply go up on our website and pull down all of our newsletters. They go back into, about 1993, 1994. And then, of course, we hope that you'll watch the DVDs that are readily available there, that you'll listen to the programs, and you'll become a regular listener to our programs. And remember, there are 4 hours a day that you can listen to on the Internet. And then, of course, we hope that you'll get some of the books. You'll read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll listen to my talk on the Forbidden Secret. And, of course, you'll get our four tape set, our four CD set on the secret behind the secret. You'll get the video, the secret mystery of America's beginnings. And the riddles in stone, the secret history of the architecture of our nation's capital. Because we explain that from the very beginning there were two forces in America. One was the Christian and the righteous, and the other, of course, was the occult. And initially the Christian was predominant, but today the occult is predominant, and that's why we're in the wars we are. If you've never heard my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, it's available on DVD or video, and of course it comes with an excellent syllabus we recommend you get. You need to hear my talk on The Hidden Agenda and read the syllabus, because it simply points out that they're poisoning the American people with hydrofluorosilicic acid. 90% of the communities where they fluoridate the water, they don't use sodium fluoride. They use hydrofluorosilicic acid that contains lead and cadmium and polonium-20 and fluoride as well. And in all those areas, the children, when they test their blood, have an increased blood level of lead. And, of course, specifically in the black, it causes rage. And in those communities, you find many, many more of the blacks in prison. Why? Because, of course, they get six times the increase in the level of lead, and lead leads to rage and anger and hostility. And this is brought out by Dr. Roger Masters back there at Dartmouth. And we have, of course, my interviews with him. Understand that they are poisoning our children with aspartame, with mercury and thimerosal, with the vaccinations that contain aluminum and stimulate the brain and cause significant brain changes. And you'll certainly want to listen to my interview with Russell Blaylock a week from this coming Monday. I believe that's the 28th, for 2 hours in the evening. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will pray for America, pray for revival.